Welkom to my... Is the audio turned on? Welcome to my talk.
Did I?
That's still turned on. Keep talking. Hello? Hello? Welcome... Yes. Welcome to my... Welcome to my talk. Sorry for the delay, but I was planning to do my talk on a laptop that's the same age as myself, but it's too old or the rest of the setup is too new. So this is our backup. I donated a kidney a half a year ago, and that's what I want to talk about. First, a little bit about myself. My name is Peter Hazenberg, or Peter. I'm born in 1994, just like that laptop. I'm a member of RevSpace. I'm also a member of Team Warehouse, and I'm a member of the OneBean team. There's also one other important person featured in this talk, sitting right there. Sven Slootweg, UP91, born in 91, also a member of RevSpace, and they needed a kidney. So first, two disclaimers. The first one, this is not medical advice. I'm not a doctor. I'm pretty sure some of the details might be slightly wrong. And the second one, privacy is always more important than curiosity. Some of the things are very personal. We are okay with sharing, but it should always remain completely optional. The kidneys, they are your internal team waste. They filter waste products out of your blood, but they do a lot more. They regulate your blood pressure, fluid balance. Don't forget to drink enough water. And minerals like calcium and salt. So they're quite important. Thankfully, you've got two of them, usually. Why though? Why not? How couldn't I? Why not? Do I really need only one kidney? Are there any medical risks? What about downtime during recovery? There can be many reasons to not donate a kidney. However, my own grandfather lost his kidney due to an infection in the early 1950s. He lived most of his life with only one kidney, and he died of completely unrelated causes around 45 years later. So if he needed only one, I need only one. Medical risks. There are, of course, risks with any medical procedure or really anything you do anywhere. The risk that I could die during this surgery is around 1 in 3,000. It's the same risk that I would die in a traffic accident over a span of 10 years. That is a very acceptable risk. The other risks are also pretty small. Then there's downtime during recovery. For example, if you need to do physical heavy work and you can't get time off, that would be a complication. But I was in between jobs anyway, so that makes the decision a lot easier. Some people think you could also just donate your organs after you die, and that's true. However, donating a kidney when you're alive means that your kidney can last way longer. A kidney from a living donor can last for about 20 years. A kidney from a deceased donor usually lasts about half that long. So you can just do both. I am planning to donate the other kidney whenever I die, hopefully not anytime soon. What about dialysis? That's at best a temporary solution. It leads to a lower quality of life for the kidney patient. It requires additional medication, a lot of dietary limitations, and other limitations. It also is very energy intensive, so that's not something you would do if you have an alternative option. So how couldn't I? I couldn't really find any reason not to do it. I'm in very good health. It's really just the best case scenario anyway. And I enjoy helping people, and I have yet to find limits to how far I'm willing to go to help people. So this is what I did. Next chapter, how did I do it? there's a lot of steps before you can actually do it. The entire process took over a year. The first step is information gathering. There's a lot of testing. Then there's the actual surgery, and then there's recovery. So the information gathering started in September 2023 with a thing called New Team at House. In English, that's Kidney Team at Home. That's a meeting where two doctors can visit and help you explain to your friends and family all the things that come with being a kidney patient. So, I'm sorry, I'm going too fast. as a kidney patient, that's a meeting you can arrange to help explain to your friends and your family all the things that come with being a kidney patient and dealing with dialysis and looking for a kidney donor. So I tried to be there, I couldn't be there. However, another friend of us transcribed and translated the entire meeting, so I still got all the information anyway. The most important part was this part of the transcription. The most important factor in finding a donor is the blood type, and I happen to be a blood donor, so I could just look at my own blood type. So I already knew that the first step of the matching process was basically done. That's when I decided to just go for it. I took a few months to do the other considerations and make my final decision. So in September, I filled in the form to make it official. Not permanent, you can reverse your decision at any moment, even the day of the surgery itself, but I didn't. So a few days later, I received a parcel, and that's where the testing begins. It also came with a letter with an appointment to show up in the hospital in January 2024. That's basically still information gathering, registration as a patient, and then there's an intake meeting with a lot of information, more or less the same information as in the Kidney Team at Home meeting, but from another perspective. The same information as the Kidney Team at Home meeting, but from another perspective. And you fill in a medical questionnaire about your own health, and I made the weirdest delivery ever. Those two jugs were now full of urine, and I transported that across almost the entire country by train, because that's the easiest way to do it if you don't own a car. So yeah, that's what I did. There would be a lot more train trips from The Hague to Nijmegen in the following months. Then a lot of testing happened. The most important number to test is the kidney function. That's GFR or eGFR. I'm not going to try to pronounce it because I failed like a dozen times during rehearsing. It's measured in milliliters per minute, or if it's an estimation, it's measured in milliliters per minute per a standardized body surface area. If this number is above 90, that's very good, and if it's below 15, that's very bad. So they tested my kidney function, and a few weeks later I got a phone call. My kidney function was 165 milliliters a minute. For context, UP91's kidney function was only 8 milliliters a minute, so that's a huge difference. And also, the first HLA test was successful. That is the test where they figure out if your antigens are compatible. It's also very important, because if they aren't, then there's a very high chance of rejection, and you don't want that. So, around a month later, I could show up in the hospital again for more tests, blood tests. I think that's 15 vials of blood. That's quite intensive. There's also more urine tests. because they want to measure my kidney function basically every time I show up anyway. And there was a CT scan because they needed to map the layout of the blood veins. It's a contrast CT, so you also get injected with a contrast fluid. And if you ever get a chance to get a contrast CT, be prepared because it feels amazing. It feels like your body warms up from the inside for about 1 minute. No lasting effects, it just feels nice. So after all those tests, the results usually show up on the patient portal almost immediately. That's true for all the blood results, for the urine results, however, not the CT scan. This is what it looks like. It's a bit of software in an inline frame with another bit of software made by Philips, even though the scanner was made by Canon. I don't care. However, the scan didn't show up. I was having some spare time anyway, so I looked how does the software work. Turns out there's a field that tries to hide the CT scan from the patient for the first, I think, 1 or 2 weeks. But there's a download URL, so I downloaded it anyway, and there it is. So a few days later, I 3D printed my own kidney before I could even talk to a doctor. This is true size. This is 1-to-1. This is basically the CT scan in plastic. Just thought I had a bit of fun when I was waiting anyway. So in July, there was the phone call that all the testing was done and that it was approved for donation. There was some more testing between the CT scan and this phone call, but I'm skipping over some of the details because it's a lot of the same anyway. The next step is, of course, to make the appointment for the actual surgery. So during BornHack last year, I got a phone call where they asked me about my availability. And just wanted to note that it was during BornHack that was the weirdest phone call I've ever had, I think. So a few weeks later, we settled on the actual date, and the date would be the 12th of November. In October, however, I got a message from them that it would be later that week for logistical reasons. Okay, so the surgery is early in the morning, and since I need to travel across the entire country, I would just be there the afternoon before. So I arrived at exactly 13:37 o'clock. Not on purpose, it just happened. However, I got a phone call when I was almost in Nijmegen at 13:21. Turns out there were some weird unexplained blood values in Sven, so we had to cancel and do more testing. So we did more testing, we figured out that we could solve all the problems and make a new appointment for the 13th of January this year. No phone calls this time, I showed up in a hospital room and I tried the hospital dinner. The first day before the surgery, I thought the food portions were too small, but the next day I didn't think that anymore. This is the morning before the surgery. This is the last picture of me with both kidneys. I took it myself with a timer. I put my phone somewhere on, I think, the paper towel dispenser. A few hours later, I woke up with this thing on my arm to monitor my vital signs. They are fine. There's a close-up. It's a thing on Wi-Fi. I guess it's nice that you don't have to have the nurses visit you every few hours to make notes. The recipient of the kidney, in this case UP91, wakes up a lot later because their surgery starts later and is still in progress when you wake up. But as soon as I talked to them over instant messaging, they immediately felt better. Food and drinks started tasting better. It was just amazing to read those messages. And I could visit them the next day. Did I feel any pain? Almost none. I felt a little bit of pain in my shoulders. That might sound weird, but the surgery is a laparoscopic surgery, which means that they inflate your abdomen with gas, and the gas rises up and tries to escape, and then it hits your shoulders, and that can cause some very mild pain. That's the only pain I felt. The actual wounds on my abdomen, I didn't feel a thing. And a hot shower is the best fix for the shoulder pain. So to anyone who has any laparoscopic surgery, try a hot shower. So what was my kidney function? It was 83. That's basically exactly half of the number I started with. So that's perfect, I think. Over time, the kidney function might still increase to 70% of what it was before. So the kidney donation can actually be a net positive. The combined kidney function can be higher than what you started with. That's actually amazing, and that's good to know. Did I need any medication? The only thing they prescribed is paracetamol as the standard painkiller for everything. I took it for only a few days. I stopped taking it, I think, 2 or 3 days after I got home because I didn't need it, really. They also offered pyrethromide. It's a painkiller that's a bit like morphine. But it's an intravenous painkiller. They configure a pump that you can press a button to get it, but I pressed it exactly once when they demonstrated how the system worked, and I didn't really need any. So in the best case scenario, you can feel almost no pain. The recovery period was also really a best case scenario. They told me that I shouldn't do any intensive activities for 6 weeks, no sports, no running, no lifting. They would recommend walking to not sit still all the time. And I could walk multiple kilometers the first day after I got home. I got home, I think, 1.5 days after the surgery. And they allow cycling 2 weeks after, which is very useful in the Netherlands. It means you can actually get around. After those 6 weeks are finished, in March, I got back to the hospital again for the final checkup. The estimated kidney function was higher than 90 again. The method they use for estimating doesn't go higher than 90, so who knows how high it actually is. It's definitely high enough. They asked me if I feel 100% recovered, and yes. Yes, I was 100% recovered. I could do everything I could do before. Didn't feel anything. Most days, I don't even think about not having both kidneys. It doesn't make any difference at all. So normal life continues. I could lift heavy things again. And I can do silly things like cycling 90 kilometers with heavy luggage to a hacker camp like I did 2 weeks ago. The third chapter is not about me, but it's about you. What are the options, and should you do the same thing? If you want to donate your kidney, you can obviously donate anonymously to someone on the transplant list, but you can also do a directed donation if you happen to know someone who needs a kidney. There are different ways to do it. The anonymous option is probably the easiest because anyone can do it. You don't have to know anyone who needs a kidney, but you also don't find out where your kidney ends up. The obvious alternative is a directed donation. It means that you get to decide who gets your kidney, but you do have to be a match. So if you're not a match, there are still some options. There's the crossover donation. If you are a mismatch and someone else is also a mismatch, but you can match the other person's kidney donor and their recipient can match you, then you can still do the thing. They're usually planned on the same day in the same hospital or in two nearby hospitals. to make the logistics easier. But if that doesn't work out, there's even a third option. It's a domino option. It means that they can make a chain of even more incompatible donors where they match someone's where they match a patient to someone else's donor in a way that they can make a chain of multiple compatible donors that otherwise would be incompatible. They do this a few times a year. The logistics are complicated, but it's actually possible, and it does save a lot of time for on the waiting lists. So, should you do the same thing? My decision was relatively easy, but yours may or may not be. I think everyone should make their own decision. Not everyone has the same easy decision as I had, because it really was a best case scenario. There's a lot of more information on the websites of the Kidney Foundation, the Nierstichting, or the Transplantation Foundation, the Transplantatiestichting. Especially the website that's linked over there has a lot of information that is very useful. I think I got almost all my information from there. It's really well spelled out. This is the end of my talk. Thank you for coming here. Yeah, there's room for questions. It's almost midnight, so that's understandable. Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, okay. So if you can repeat the question.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a question, but I just want to say, like, much of my family, I have a genetic kidney disease that caused my kidneys to degrade much quicker than normal with them others. Therefore, me and my family members are practically guaranteed to need a kidney at some point in our lives.
You're welcome. Someone just said that he has a genetic anomaly that almost guarantees him and everyone in his family to get a kidney failure at some point in life. So he thanked me for talking about about kidney donation. Any more questions? Yes?
What is now the location where your kidney was? Do the other organs like move around to fill the gap?
The kidney is relatively small. The question was, what is now in a place where my kidney was? Well, the kidney is relatively small, and the tissue around it is relatively soft, so things just move around, and there's nothing and fat, I guess.
So you described part of the process, kind of the test suite of the surgery itself, of course, and the options. How do you look back on it all, like the entire kind of everything on it?
The question was, I described the process, the tests I took, etc. How do I look back on it all? Very positively. even though the first attempt at the surgery was a failure, it was still a positive story in the entire in its entirety. I would recommend, if you can do it, it's just a nice thing to do. It takes some time, but it's not that intensive. It's just a thing you can do, and it's mostly positive. Yes? Yeah, we already knew which. sorry. The question was, how did I get to making this decision? And we already knew each other. We were a member of the same hackerspace. And there, UP was very open about the kidney failure, the kidney disease. So I think almost everyone at our hackerspace knew about the story. And the meeting at his home, I was actually invited to that, but I wasn't there because of a scheduling screw up on my end. So I already was planning to be there and get all the information and considering donating, because why not? Any more questions? Yes? Yes, the left one. Yes, the veins. Sorry, I need to repeat the question. The question was, do you know which kidney they took? Yes, the left one. And do you know why? Yes, because the veins on the left one are a bit longer than on the right one, so the surgery is easier on the left side. And easier also means safer, of course. No question? The question was, there's no way to notice the kidney is gone, no dead, nothing. That's true, because you don't really have any sensory nerves on the inside of your body. I think, I'm not sure about this, but yeah, you usually feel things on your skin, and there's no skin where the kidney is. There are, of course, the scars on the outside, but those are very mild and small. There was another question? Yes. The question was, can I still drink alcohol? The answer is yes. I actually had a chunk, I think, the day before yesterday. I almost never drink anyway. But yes, you can drink and eat and do almost anything you normally could. During the recovery, there is the warning that you shouldn't take ibuprofen or other NSAIDs, because those medications are pretty hard on the kidneys in general. But outside of that, I think there's nothing. They also advise you to not eat too much salt and drink enough water, but that's the same advice that applies to everyone else. They just, the same advice, but stronger. Yes, I have one final remark. I have 10 more copies 3D printed of my kidney. To anyone who wants one, I can hand them out.